out, because as we're going to get into, they're going to privatize as well the tea. They've already started. These are like very important jobs to tens of thousands of people in the Boston area, and basically you have the Democratic Party controlled legislature, usually a Democratic governor, but here we have the anomaly of a Republican governor in power, and they're all getting along very well. Baker and the scum, all those scumbags up in the state house, and they're going ahead and raising our tea fare. I just canceled my monthly pass. I can't handle the increase. Screw it. And I have a car, at least for now. Who knows? It's going to die soon. I'm going to drive in, and the traffic is just horrible. So I'll get up earlier, like everybody else. You know, there's traffic jams at like 6:45 in the morning on the turnpike. You know. Because everyone's got the same thing. They can't afford. They can't. You know, commuter rail is going up really a lot with this. And, you know, who can afford that? I'll give you talk about the commuter rail for here real quick.
What's the price now? I haven't read
it. Well, biggest losers for commuter rail riders. I'm quoting from this article from the Boston Globe. Some of whom will now pay nearly $400 a month for a monthly pass. So you're going to pay, you know, single ride tickets will increase from $210 to $1,150 to $225 and $1,250. That's how much they're going up. Monthly commuter rail passes, which are already fairly expensive if you live far enough today, will also increase from between $75 and $362 or $84.50 to $398. So every month, and if you're only riding that for the for work, it's not worth it. I've costed it out. It's not worth it, you know, at all. And they raise it.
It's probably cheaper to get a Uber.
Well, yeah, it's
going to pick you up and go.
Well, I don't know about that. I think a lot of people try a lot of different ways to get in, and that's why you see a lot of people riding bikes and stuff, and nothing really works. You ride your bike, you risk getting killed or becoming a jerk because... yeah.
They're getting into the bike thing now with the hubs. Have you seen those yeah. bikes? Yeah. So, you know, you pay, what, $85 a year, and you just go there, get a bike, you know, and then you go.
$85 a year is too much, I think. But anyway, you in relation to your question, Diego, let's see. Bus, old, that's the one thing that went down. It went down 10 cents, basically for convenience, because they had it at $210. Now it's $2. They think that's a big deal. $2. See, what people have to understand is, what if you're only going two stops or one stop? You know, you're paying the same amount as somebody going 20 stops. So that $2 is a lot of money. That you got to multiply every time you jump on and off, you know? So, like, you're going, you're going using it twice a day, just for, you know, that's at least $4 on the bus. Yeah, now you go up with a Charlie ticket or cash for some reason on the bus, you get screwed. You go up to $5, et cetera. I mean, I won't go through all the stuff here. Maybe mention a couple others. Almost everyone is going to see their fares rising. Monthly pass holders especially will see some big increases. That's why one reason I canceled mine. And then they compare it to other cities and say, oh, it's really not that bad. It is bad. It's bad in the other cities, too.
It's better in Houston. You pay once and go around.
Yeah, but it's just really, really, you know, going up 9.3% on average or 9.5% on average. And it didn't have to go up at all. All they had to do was raise taxes on the wealthy, raise taxes on the big businesses. And they won't do it. They just won't do it. And that's funny because who benefits the most from public transit? Now, your first thought might be it's people, the average person. Well, yes and no. What does the average person unfortunately have to do every day? Try to get their butts into work and then go shopping for food and stuff. And that helps the businesses both ways. They exploit your labor and then they take your money when you consume, right? That's one of the evils of capitalism, that they get you coming and going. Taxes, consumption, most of all, extraction, you know, exploiting your labor power. So you're going out to shop in their stores, by public transit. You're going to their stupid jobs by public transit. They should be paying for the public transit. And that's originally how, believe it or not, it was thought of. It was businesses that were like, oh, yeah, they were taught that they owed something to the community, quote unquote, because the people are going to their stores. They need workers to get into work and all that. That was the original, you know, impetus. They didn't care that people wanted stuff like that. It was the businesses wanted it. That's why Bass Transit came in. You know, they got to the point, like in Boston, where downtown Boston, you had just incredible traffic jams where nothing was moving. And the business were like, this is intolerable. We need people to get into our stores. We need our workers to get in, blah, blah, blah. That's why public transit started. It wasn't because they didn't care that people were stuck in traffic. They cared that businesses were losing money off it, you know? And now, so they're forcing the whole burden of paying for this stuff onto working people. And it's a freaking sin. These people should be in prison. And you know what the really sad part is? On the META board, yeah, there's a couple union people there that they got on there. The hotel workers union got people appointed to the META board by the Weld administration because they started supporting Republicans as a union supporting Republicans or Democrats. But it's insane. But they did it. They got their little seats on the board. They approve everything that comes up, you know. And that's the worst thing. Those are like traitors. That's like collaborators from the French Resistance on the META board. Union people that are on there, letting these things go through, staying on the board. Any union person with an ounce of class solidarity would have resigned from that board years ago in protest at the fare increases, the cancellation of bus routes, all the crap they've done over the years, and they're still doing. Now we find out, after privatizing, which they don't mention this article, by the way. See, the thing with the corporate media is, as the god of capitalism is really short-term maximization of profit. Now, that flows into a lot of other things. So having a clear history of anything under capitalism is very, very difficult and really not necessary as far as the capitalists are concerned. So the corporate media, the capitalist media, writes about the tea stuff as if it was just happening within the last couple years or something, you know? So they're talking about privatization, meaning taking these public jobs and turning them over to private corporations as if it's like a new thing, right? And it's actually as if this will save a lot of money without saying, well, they've already actually tried this a lot and it hasn't, and you're still having increasing deficits. So how does that work? That's not in this article because they've already privatized the janitors and the tea a long time ago. Long time ago. They privatized. One thing the article does mention is they quietly privatized the people that collect money from some, you know, they collect money from the things, whatever, from the machines and all that. They privatized a part of that. I mean, it's just ridiculous. As if privatization is going to like solve anything. It just makes things worse all the time, and takes away accountability, takes away control. It's just really horrible. So they're going after the warehouse workers. Now, there's a lot of tea warehouse workers. The union is correctly upset about it, the Carmen's Union, which is also affiliated to the ATU, American Transit Workers Union. But they're not, of course, all they're doing is complaining. They're not preparing for a strike like they should be. They're not preparing for, with other unions, they're not preparing for a general strike. They're not even doing job actions around it. It's all just talk. And there was the biggest thing, like, was last week. They went begging, the union, the Carmen's Union, went begging to the MBTA bosses with cuts and concessions that would actually hurt their own union members. But that wasn't enough for the bosses. This is the thing about concessionary bargaining. If you're a union leader, and you think you're going to get anywhere with concessions, don't you understand that just makes you look weak? Not only are you hurting the membership, but the bosses just laugh and say, oh, if they're willing to give up that, they'll give up something else. And it's a race to the bottom. That's why we got 6% union density in the private sector, because the unioners haven't figured out or don't care about that basic equation. You go in with concessionary bargaining, you come out with more concessions, not less. You know, you go in with concessionary bargaining, you're weak, you're stupid. The bosses have contempt for you. When are you going to wake up? But a lot of the unioners are like, ah, screw it, I'll retire. I don't care. I got a big salary, I'll just retire. Let them deal with it. Let someone else deal with it. They have no class vision. They have no Marxism, no socialism. So it's all just, union's a business, but here's this business that's hurting my business. And blah, 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 blah. You freaking moron, retire, resign. Let someone in that understands what the nature of capital is, what the nature of big businesses, what the nature of corporations are, and why working people need unions. And you fight and you organize. So here they are. They're going to outsource jobs in the MBTA's warehouse operations. T officials are pushing to outsource about 38 jobs in a department that costs $4.2 million annually. Now, where's the correlation there? Who cares if it's $4.2 million? Yeah, maybe it costs a lot to keep the lights on. Who cares? Maybe that's nothing, you know? There's more, you know, you could mug a couple rich people downtown and get that money from their credit cards. I mean, this is not a lot of money. Uh-huh. They also revealed they had quietly replaced transit police officers with private security agents at the money room where employees count cash fares. Now the police union complained a little bit about that. Oh boy. And guess what? They hired these workers, quote unquote, from the security agency that employed the gunman. The guy that did the mass shootings in Orlando. The crazy guy. The Islamic fundamentalist guy who did all the shootings. He worked for the same security company. That's great.
I feel safe.
Yeah. So, they had a hearing. Democrats, some of them liked the privatization. Some of them didn't. But they'll all go along with it, you'll see. They'll all go along with it. They always do at the end of the day. Scumbags that they are. And, yeah, there you go. Check out the boss's glob for that. For some reason, you had some guy from Worcester City Council. I'm going to get to know more about this jerk. What's his name? Gaffney? Michael Gaffney or something? Chairman of the Worcester City Council, Democrat. He touted Worcester's own management of a golf course where they privatized it as what the MBTA is doing. What a moron. And they're gonna. So he was defending the privatization. Anyway,
what's
just
he
horrible.
To do? He's not in Boston.
Yeah, well, it's the legislature that controls the MBTA. You know, the whole state, which is a problem. You know, it's a problem in a way. I mean, it should be controlled politically, but
thought those things were like
I don't know
county different.
I don't know. Maybe it, you know. Obviously, it, the structure. You could have a million different structures, but if you don't have a workers' party. Or Socialist Party or something like that in power, it's all going to suck no matter what structures you come up with. They're all going to be trying to privatize it and everything. Here's something that caught my eye along the same lines of what we're talking about. The decline of American unions is a threat to public health. This whole article about how since unions have gone down, a lot of healthcare plans have gone down. You know, if you don't have a union contract with a healthcare plan in it, management's not going to just hand you a decent healthcare plan. You know, I don't really have time to get into it in any huge way, but I just wanted to mention it. It comes from the decline of American unions is a threat to public health. American Journal of Public Health, June 2006, volume 106, number 6, pages 968 to 969. So it's from the American Journal of Public Health. I thought it was interesting that a doctor would actually, you know, line up the points and understand that how unions, at least somewhat, how unions fit into this. And also, he even goes on to say unions help, quote, promote public health through political activism, advocating for minimum wage increases, advocating for, I don't know if he says it, but for, you know, single payer or a national health service, that sort of thing. By the way, though, getting back to the MBTA, a point I started to make and we didn't finish talking about is think of all the health. Think of people are actually going to die from this. You know, if you just trace, it's like a lot of things under capitalism. What seems like sort of just a business thing that you can section off as just it's money playing around with money and yeah, it hurts, but it's just money. No, money is how the whole system runs, right? In a general sense of the universal commodity being money, and who controls most of it controls the most commodities, et cetera, and then controls the state, the government through that power. And so you basically have, you know, by controlling the production of commodities under capitalism, you control the political system, educational system, et cetera. And everything has a knock-on effect. It's like, it's, you know, if you want to use a rough analogy, it's like an ecosystem. So here you have more people are going to be forced to ride in cars because of the increase of the fare, because of these fare increases. Now, it's not only going to make traffic jams and shit like that, but let's think about it. More people in cars means more car accidents, people dying. More people in cars means more pollution, people dying from pollution-related, you know, effects, which are a lot. The instead of building subway lines, more buses out there. The bus is the only thing going down slightly, 10 cents for some people. That's going to create more bus riders, more pollution that way. Buses aren't a solution, by the way. They need to have more trolleys and all sorts of ways, electric buses, all that stuff. Anyway, you just go through a whole. You could if you just sit down and think about the collateral damage or the after effects of this fare increase. People are actually going to die from it, but you never see that in the corporate media. It's just like, oh well, a little more out of your paycheck. No, you're taking a public right and a public need at a time of global warming and so on, you know, where you need more mass transit. That's just a fact. If you want people to ride it, it's got to be free. It's got to be free. Stop screwing around with this low fare, that high fare, whatever. It's got to be free. And it's not. And instead, it's going up. And it's getting, and they don't even want to do the Green Line extension. Remember, this will give an example of what I'm talking about. Remember, you know, you've read about the Green Line extension, right, in Somerville?
Yeah, gentrification.
It's all screwed up. No. Well, there's another side to it. It's all screwed up. But you know what the root of that what is? It's not like the businesses or the puppets of the businesses and the political and the city councils and all that. It's not like they said, oh, let's expand the T because it would really help people. It came from a lawsuit. Remember the guy that stepped in human waste on the Walston Beach back in the 90s?
No.
This is a famous thing. It was during when Dukakis was running for whatever, and it came out Bush Sr. used it in the campaign that...
I might have still been in Houston at the time.
Well, Boston had the most polluted harbor in the country just about because they had no sewage system big enough to handle the sewage. They're putting raw sewage right into the harbor and it would go out to the beaches, and some fairly rich guy, a lawyer, was walking his dog and found he was walking human waste. One thing led to another, a lawsuit that got backed by environmental groups, and part of the settlement was they had to expand mass transit because all this stuff fits together in terms of the environment. If you expand mass transit, you'll have less pollution in various ways, less public health dangers, etc. So they're under threat of a law, but they're just ignoring the law. And this isn't the first time. This is not the first thing. There was supposed to be the subway was supposed to reconnect between Jamaica Plain and Forest Hills. They shot that one down. It was part of that lawsuit. You know, it used to, when I first hit town, it used to go down Center Street for like, you didn't stop at Heath Street. Heath Street went all the way to Forest Hills.
Yeah,
by subway, by trolley. Now you have this one. They keep pushing it back. They keep cutting it, even though they're legally bound to do it. And what I'm trying to say is with this story is show how I'm not the only one thinking, oh yeah, there are environmental consequences to raising the T fare. It's all linked. It's all this stuff is linked. And then there's people that like, well, I can't afford a car. I can't afford the T now. They're going to be walking. Think about all the people like maybe young women or women walking late at night that are now going to be in danger because they're going to try to save $4 or whatever, $2, $3 by not taking the subway, which is really important to save if you're a low wage worker. Think about people that, yeah, that they'd rather be riding in bad weather or not go through a rough neighborhood. They're not going to have to ride in the bad weather, their bike or walk, or they're going to have to go through a rough neighborhood. It's all got knockout effects that Bosses Glob doesn't think about. Anyway, you were going to say something, yeah.
Or because of the infrastructure, you get flat tires every other month or so, like I've been lately with my bike.
Yeah, I went through a thing with my car where I was getting flat tires every month, so that gets really super expensive. But, now we're getting more technical difficulties here. Anyway, yeah, okay, here's another one along the same lines. Again, I don't have time to read this. It's a whole report, but I just want to point it out. Like, you know, death by 1,000 cuts for working people. So here we go. This is from an avowedly pro-Democratic Party think tank. I actually corresponded with one of the like directors briefly, because he liked something I wrote, and I'm like, and he saw my Harvard email, so he got all excited that I was like some Harvard student or professor or something. I'm like, no, I'm just a worker, and by the way, I'm a socialist. I'm in socialist alternative, blah blah. Of course, never heard from the guy again. I love doing that to people. I'm like, it's so like, much fun.
What?
It's so much fun to have a Harvard email. Is the biggest fun in the world. You know.
Well, that's like, Lord forbid, I didn't say nothing, but the owner, the guy that gave me the job at this new place that I work at, Woo Burger, you know, in East Cambridge, Inman Square area, and he's like, oh, I said something to the effect, poor Sanders, man, you know, something like that, because he was talking about, he's like, oh no, if he got in, I would have to shut all my businesses.
Excellent. Yeah. Shut them down, baby. Shut them down. There's things more important than your businesses, you know? Like life. Like the life of the planet. Not that Sanders would do anything like that, but... See, that's the problem with Sanders.
By your own tongue, I'm like, I need a job.
Yeah, by running in the Democrats, Sanders really cut off any path to real change. But there's still a slight chance he might run independent, I suppose. No one's got a crystal ball. And if he did that, that would be a game changer. Say he hooked up with Jill Stein, for example. That would be something to really get behind. You know, you mentioned Clover. I want to digress for a second. Clover wants to be the McDonald's. Did you notice that Clover is in Harvard Square now?
Yes.
that place that they're in?
It used to be my favorite.
It used to be a Chinese place, yeah.
Yang.
Yeah, but... long before that, if you read, there's some sort of history on the wall. You know how Clover likes to like make little stories up.
Up on Payne's gone, right?
Yeah, but no, that's not the point. But you're right. Yeah. Yeah. No, the history of that actual space is it was like a cafeteria or something way back in the day, like in the 40s. You know, where working people could actually get something to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to see it return to a food place. But of course, it's food that I find kind of gagging. I don't know. It kind of turns me off their food. I don't know why. I liked something I had there once, but it was too much money. And I don't know. And the place is crowded though, because that's such a good place to like that corner they got now in Harvard Square. People are dying for public space, so they go and sit there. The Panera Bread in Harvard Square closed down. Old Bon Pan's closed down. You got nowhere to go and just sit. You know, so they're gonna go to Clover now. The guy that runs is probably gonna go crazy. Oh, what are you sitting there for? Buy something, you know. It's gonna be funny. But anyway, go ahead. Go ahead.
And also, this Clover, and let me expose this because you know I don't work there no more. I left for that reason. Just got up and quit. Like literally didn't show up for one shift. They kept on texting me. Are you still sick? Are you still what's going on? Are you still coming in next week? I'm like, do you not get the hint? But anyway, my last check, which is the 24th, and this happened to everybody. Oh, there was a snafu in the payroll person, the person, or whatever you want to call it. They paid us on Monday because there was a snafu, and we can't just give you the money out this. Well, open the safe then. You know, that's what a lot of people are saying.
Yeah. You know, the wage theft is huge. I don't have an article about that today or anything to talk about that today.
And they've been doing it.
Wage theft is huge, and there's so many ways to do it. Like, first of all, even Marx writes about this in Capital, I think it is. He says, even back when he was writing in the 1800s, you ever notice how you don't get paid every day? You get paid every, you know, when you first start. There's always a delay, a week, maybe two, maybe three. Maybe you get paid monthly. There's almost a 4-week delay before your first paycheck.
Every week, which is better.
Wait. Follow my argument for a second. I'm not talking about. Yeah. Okay. There's better and worse. But what I'm saying is that nobody gets paid their full amount, or almost nobody. I think there are some like temp agencies that might do this, but there's a catch to it. But nobody gets paid the same day they work. So you start a job. Hey, here's your pay for that day. Boom. They never do that. Why? Because they earn interest off the money they don't pay you, especially the big corporations. The smaller corporations, they get free labor until you get paid.
And they made money off of the money.
Totally. But there's also so many other ways. What I'm saying is that there's this basic thing the capitalists did right from the start was to delay payment of wages, which equals free labor for a while until payment. And then that payment, of course, as we know as Marxists, is never the full amount of value you're creating for the process. You're getting back a tiny amount of the surplus value that they're getting from exploiting your labor and exploiting nature and all that. But anyway, there's a million other ways. I mean, I know of cases of outright wage theft. I know two personal friends of mine over the years that they worked a part-time job, and in one case, the person never got paid. They kept like stringing her along. Oh yeah, you didn't get the pay that week, but you'll get the pay. It was with college too, and then that she never got a paycheck after she put in like 3 weeks of work. I'm not kidding you. And I had the kind of personality that really didn't want to fight. You know, I don't know about a lot of our listeners, but by working at Harvard University, there's a certain percentage of the workforce that is kind of stunned. They're like a rabbit that got hit over the head or something. They're just kind of, or a deer in the headlights. They're just kind of stunned because they grew up actually upper middle class or rich, and they expected to get jobs in academia and so on. And all they got was this crappy job it's at a university, but it's just a crappy job. You don't need a degree for
welcome
it, really.
Welcome to the real world.
Yeah, welcome to the real world, exactly. You don't need a degree necessarily, but they're degreed up like crazy. Got lots of degrees. And they're making bad money. They're not part of the university in any real way. And so, but they still have these like prejudices from the way they grew up. So the idea of like fighting a company over wages just is beyond their pale. They just don't understand it. So the person I'm thinking of never fought for 3 weeks of wages. And then there's another friend of mine who definitely would fight and has fought battles like that and did fight this, but lost ultimately. That shows how toothless the state laws are. She was promised, she got a promotion, you know, she's promised a certain amount of money, and then they wouldn't come up with any paperwork. And after a while, she got suspicious. She said, this isn't, you know, you're not paying me the amount you promised, blah, blah, blah. They got a supervisor that had given her all the stuff who she was, like, friends with and all that to just lie. And there was, like, again, like a month, two, something like that, where all this money didn't materialize that she was promised. And she actually fought it. She went to this state board, all this stuff you're supposed to do. Very, very difficult to do that, but she had the drive and the fight to do it. And they still messed her over, you know.
Well, I fought recently. I was, you know, I told you about the unemployment. Yeah, yeah. They were trying to say, no. Well, guess what? It ruled in my favor. Yeah, it ruled in my favor. It was late, but it came. It was $1,500-something. It's going to my bank account. But I'm going to wait for a while with that money because I don't want them to do the same situation they did in Rite Aid where they give me the money and then turn around and try to appeal to get it back. Where you have five lawyers from the company and you're representing yourself and, you know, this little mockery of a court kind of thing going on here, or jury, what do you want to call it?
I know exactly what you're talking about, because I used to do that. I used to, as was a paralegal doing unemployment law, and I know exactly what you're talking about. And I think I've told that story on the air before, but yeah, they create this like mock jury thing with a bureaucrat who they call a hearing examiner. And then if it goes beyond that, it goes to, there's actually an actual lawyer or two sitting on some board, state board, that look over cases on appeal. And you're right, the company probably could appeal it. You might be able to find out whether or not they are, which might be worth a phone call or two if you can get through the...
Like Rite Aid did the same thing.
But what I'm saying is you could probably get in touch with somebody right now. Did you have any representation at all? Did you just do it there alone?
I just claim, you know, through the mailing process here, this is my rebuttal to that. You know, I was let go for no, you know, I did not sign this, you know, that kind of thing. And through mail, eventually, I guess they just gave me one check and I deposited it. But I'm not going to touch it for that one reason, because, you know, they'll do the same thing where Rite Aid, you know, the company says, no, he doesn't deserve it, blah, 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 you know.
That's a miracle, and congratulations on getting that just by writing the stuff. Yeah. All I'm trying to say is if there's a way, and I believe there would be, to call and see if they are appealing it. I'm not sure who you need to talk to. It might be the appeals something or other. It's all changed since I was doing it, or changed a bit since I was doing it, but the same dynamic is there. It's all stacked against the worker. Anyway, getting back to our main thread here, then I find this other report, besides that obvious thing about rents increasing and how horrible that is. Quote, twin threats, how disappearing public pensions hurt black workers. So here's this whole thing, and it's quite a good report, even though it's from Demos, that you know, Democratic Party front think tank. I mean, well, I'm not sure they're a front, but they support the Democratic Party. And they go through how, you know, all these attacks on public sector workers, that's the one place where, because of the civil rights movement and so on, and because of the nature of inner cities in a lot of places, not in the nature of, but because of the demographics of now, of a lot of black people in the inner cities, there was black people were able to get more of those city jobs. I'm putting this, you know, pretty simply. And now they're attacking there being big business. The corporations are attacking that sector of the workforce, which is more heavily unionized. It's like 30-something% versus the 6% private. And even among the union workers, they're going after pensions. Now, Detroit is the biggest example of that, where they went after workers that had retired from union jobs, many of whom were still technically members of the union or covered by union contracts, so they do cover retirees sometimes, and they still got their pensions stolen by the Democrats and big business, by the city and big business. It's really, really bad. And so this is all contributing to more poverty. This is the point of the report, more poverty among black workers in general. So Black Lives Matter, whatever. No, they don't matter to big business, you know? And this is the kind of thing where I think a lot of activists, instead of trying to change people's individual psychology or make them use the correct vocabulary all the time, they should be focusing more on this, more on strengthening unions, creating a third party that will fight for working people. And in America, that's soon going to mean majority people of color. So there's so much to do to stop just the basic hurt and basic decline in living standards that's happening to American workers. That's just one example, but it's a very, very important one. So you know, the whole framework in the corporate media is, oh, you get rid of pensions, public pensions, you save money for the taxpayer. But the taxpayer is the worker. And if workers don't have pensions, they're screwed because you can't make money. You can't get hired, you know, when you're older for most things. And if you can't get hired for something, it's low pay. And you don't have anything to live on. And that's why, like, before pensions started to really... Before Social Security was forced in by the movement in the 30s, the almost revolutionary movement, and before the labor movement forced a lot of companies to add pensions to that, back in the 20s, teens of the 20th century and so on, you had a lot of poverty among the elderly, like huge, huge poverty among the elderly, you know, just huge. Because it was the same way. They couldn't work anymore or the capitalists wouldn't hire them, whatever. They just had huge, huge poverty.
We're sliding back to that
completely. So I don't know. You've heard of Counterpunch, right? DiegoCounterpunch.org. Yeah. That's a pretty good website with a lot of different essays on it. And sometimes that turns into kind of a debate. So there's been this guy I've been reading. I've been liking his stuff. Andrew Smolsky. He's been writing lately about how he will not buy into the lesser evil thing again. And he's arguing against it. And all these other so-called lefties are coming out for lesser evilism. The latest one being Chomsky, actually. Now, Chomsky's done this before. Chomsky supported, in 2004, a vote for Kerry. In 2008, a vote for Obama. 2012, Obama again. Chomsky is, in a lot of ways, very weak politically, even though he's very nice guy, and very much out there with a lot of causes, liberal left causes, you know. Yeah, and his writings are very interesting on the media, on the Middle East and so on. But, you know, he's basically calling for a vote for the Democrats as a lesser evil thing. He didn't always do that, but he's doing it now. So there's a guy that went after this guy, Smolsky, a guy named John Hall, H-A-L-E, using Chomsky as a club, and this whole debate opening up on lesser evilism. And it's really, really worth reading. Go to counterpunch.org. And just some quotes from this that are kind of interesting. Quote, should there be any surprise that xenophobia, that means extreme nationalism, is on the rise under a president, meaning Obama, who has become known as the deporter-in-chief? Chomsky himself labeled the Obama administration champion in deportation, quote-unquote. It is this deportation apparatus put on steroids over the last 8 years that has been destroying families. It is an apparatus that will be continued under either Clinton or Trump along with the expansion of the private prison system that turned incarcerated bodies into profit. Truly, how can we call something lesser, quote unquote, when it creates the framework for the more, quote unquote? It is foolish to do so, and only sensible if we ignore chronological order in causal relations, meaning that if you elect, what he means by that last sentence is that if you all of a sudden like forget the past entirely and elect Clinton because you think that's a lesser evil, you're ignoring all the things that were done by the Democrats, including Clinton Sr., to set up the situation now. When will we stop accepting the ludicrous notion that Democrats care about climate? Under the Obama administration, Arctic drilling was approved, which only was stopped due to the drop in oil prices, itself a result of overproduction under capitalism. Further, CO2 has continued its exponential increase with a 1.5 degree Celsius rise in temperature is already a foregone conclusion. This fact is written off as frivolous in comparison to imagined nightmarish Republican attacks. But in reality, it doesn't matter who rhetorically accepts climate change when there is no reduction in greenhouse gas emissions in either case, i.e. the effects of policy, despite the rhetoric, is the same. Exclaiming that the Republicans will do away with the EPA while Democrats push a trade agreement that would allow corporations to sue and abolish regulations that interfere with profits is to not understand that there are many roads to ruin. As I said before, damned if you do, damned if you don't, and no less damneder a situation on the horizon in terms of lesser evilism. Anyway, on and on. It's good stuff. And then he mentioned Shama Sawant, so this is pretty cool. He mentioned Shama Sawant and Jill Steinman calling for Bernie supporters to bring in support of a third party. They're effectively demonized by this lesser evil strategy. That's true. That's something we didn't talk about before. Maybe we should talk about a little bit. In Social Alternative, we're predicting a huge wave. It's not hard to predict this. It happens every time. We're predicting a certain, maybe more venomous, more nasty part, part to it with the lesser evil stuff. And basically, the situation is going to be just increasingly, do you want Trump in there? You have to vote for Clinton. That's already out there a lot. And they're doing it to people that were supporting Sanders. And it's going to increase. Now, the question in my mind is, but Trump and Clinton are really, really disliked. And like I said before, there are these constituencies that are outside of that paradigm already. There's people that are, say, the Sandernistas that say, you know, Bernie or bust, I'm not going to vote for Clinton. There's the independents that already exist. There's people already supporting Stein. She was polling 7% recently. So there's all these people out there that aren't going to buy into lesser evilism, but then there's a lot more that are. And politically, you know, we got to mix it up with hopefully mostly the people that aren't buying into it, but sometimes we're going to mix it up with those that are, that basically no matter what argument you make, they're not going to listen practically. But you have to try. But the point is that that's going to get worse probably, not better. Probably going to get eat into that number of Sanders people that are right now willing to say, no, I won't vote for Clinton. Because, you know, the corporate media is going to just ratchet up the propaganda as it gets closer to the election. It's going to be even worse than it has been. And also the left, the liberals, you know, so liberals, I don't consider liberals left, but other people do. So I'll just say liberals. They're going to be using this, they already are, in a huge, huge way. It's going to get really nasty. And the number of people that can stand up against that, especially if you're not in a socialist group, if you're not in Socialist Alternative or whatever, it's going to be difficult. But stand up, one must. There is the Stein vote, to vote for Stein. If by some miracle, it's not likely at all. But if Sanders ran as an independent with Stein or without Stein, that would be another way to vote. That's really important to, if we're ever going to get a Workers' Party off the ground, to realize that the raw material for that party in terms of people, in terms of resources, is going to come from other electoral attempts from the left that are independent big business, left-wing greens that formulate their politics through these campaigns, through movements of different types. That's, by the way, one criticism of the Green Party. Like, we're not, the Social Alternative is not endorsing the Green Party per se, we're endorsing the Stein campaign because the Green Party, its program is mixed. There's some anti-capitalist elements to it. They just actually put forward more anti-capitalism into their program. but they're still, they have illusions in small capitalism and stuff like that. And also they don't really organize movements like they should. Like, they shouldn't just keep themselves alive for elections. They should be trying to organize movements around $15 minimum wage and all sorts of other stuff. And many of them are probably involved in that. But we've also seen polls and information, data, that a lot of Greens end up voting Democrat. They cave to the lesser evil argument ultimately. So the whole thing about, you know, endorsing the Green Party as a whole, no, it's not there. Although there are left-wing Greens that we've endorsed, like Howie Hawkins when he ran as a Green, Aaron Dixon, and Cynthia McKinney, I believe, ran as a Green. When Nader ran as a Green, we intend to endorse their campaigns as left-wing people, not so much the Green Party. Anyway, the point is that to stand up to lesser evilism, it's going to take a lot. It's going to take a lot of education, and most people won't do it. But out of that core that each time seems to be getting bigger, that does stand up to it, is where a future Workers' Party of some sort, whatever it's called, Socialist Party or something, will come from. So it's really important to stay strong, and we'll see who does. There's other stuff in Counterpunch. Chris Ernesto, June 28th, Bernie's, quote, political revolution, unquote, equals a vote for Clinton and the neocons. He goes further and basically talks about how imperialism, and this is true, was not brought into the Democratic Party primary by Sanders. Sanders has a bad record on that kind of stuff. But it's ultimately, it's against lesser evilism. And he says, quote, for example, clearly Sanders is caving into the Clinton camp for some empty promises of getting parts of his agenda on the official Democratic Party platform. And you can see that in the corporate media. As if a party's platform has anything to do with what it actually is implemented. Well, in the case of the Republican Democratic parties, he's right. It has nothing to do with it. There's no mechanism for holding a Clinton to the Democratic Party platform or any other Democratic Party candidate. He says some Sanders supporters are already calling him out in anticipation of Sanders accepting such empty platform promises and a lofty position in a Clinton administration in return for Sanders' support of Clinton. I'm not sure he'll get that position. He's already got these pretty lofty positions in the Senate, but whatever. Let's see. Anyway, it's a good article to read. I think we should take a quick break here. And is that all right? Yeah, and we'll come back with some discussion with our limited amount of time on Brexit and the Leave vote. So you're listening to Social Alternative Radio on WFO 91.5 FM. And that was the clash with Police on My Back. And we're back now to Socialist Alternative Radio with your co-host Jeff and Diego for the very last part of our show. Running out of time. We're going to go quick now. We promised a lot on Brexit. Now we've kind of ran out of time, but we'll talk about it. First of all, though, just to point out, there is a teacher's strike going on in Mexico that a lot of, I don't know if the corporate media is covering this at all, but this is from socialistworld.net, Adam Ziemkowski, Social Alternative USA, 6/28/2016. Mexico teachers continue to strike despite extreme repression. Tens of thousands of teachers in Mexico have been on strike since May 16th, led by the National Education Workers Coordinating Committee. And this is the CNTE. It's in opposition to an education reform law that would open the door to mass firings of teachers, weaken public sector unions, and pave the way for privatization of public education. Now, also, there's a government in power, conservative government, Enrique Peña Nieto, which is they've taken a hardline approach toward the teacher strike from the beginning. They fired more than 4,000 teachers. At least 10 people have been killed in repression. I read some article about more disappearances happening from activists, like those students that disappeared. In the wake of this tragedy, the CNTE, that's the National Educating Workers Coordinating Committee, has vowed to continue its opposition to the education reforms, receiving considerable community support in Mexico City. Andrés Manuel López Obrador and the National Revolutionary Movement Morena Party held an enormous rally with as many as 250,000 people, by some estimates, in support of the teachers. Morena Party is something to watch in upcoming elections, by the way. Getting back to the article, quoting, there has also been a tremendous amount of international support. Seattle City Council member Shama Swan expressed solidarity with the striking CNTE teachers on behalf of Socialist Alternative and the Committee for Workers International in a letter and video. The government's refusing to back down, etc. Check out this article. Look for others. It's hard to find information. The context of this, of course, is 50% of the Mexican population lives in poverty, including 40 million children, while super wealthy individuals like Carlos Slim, whose personal wealth is more than $75 billion, have accumulated tremendous fortunes. What that's getting into is that Mexico is one of the most unequal, I don't know if you ever heard about this, dear, one of the most unequal societies in the world right now, where some of the biggest, richest, biggest billionaires come from Mexico, actually. There's the tremendous instability there from the murders, the drug wars and all that, corruption and massive corruption in the government and all that. But the article states, quote, "Capitalism in Mexico, however, will not fall on its own. More working people will need to follow the lead of the CNTE teachers and wage an organized struggle against the education reform law, as well as other attempts by the government to impose a neoliberal agenda." It's neoliberal agenda. Workers also urgently need a political force capable of providing an alternative vision of the bankrupt system of capitalism. The development of an independent left force like Morena is encouraging and could provide an important space for ordinary people to build working class struggle, while also grappling with the best ways to fight against capitalism to build a socialist world where people come before profit.
Yeah, it's the same situation that was happening back in the late 70s in El Salvador, which led to a civil war. A lot of students uprising against, the 14 families that ruled the whole oligarchy that ruled society at that time.
Yeah, and we want to end the show talking about, we're going to just have to not segue very smoothly there from the important teacher strike in Mexico, which, again, please look for more information on that. There's not much out there, but what you can find in the alternative media, go to socialistworld.net, go to socialistalternative.org, go to counterpunch.org, etc. We want to go on to Brexit, which has gotten a lot of corporate media attention, but almost entirely from the standpoint of how could those horribly racist, stupid British working people vote to leave the EU? And, I'll tell you how I felt the morning of Brexit. I felt excellent. A punch to the gut of big business. That's a good thing. One less club in the arsenal of the ruling class to beat over the head of working people in Britain and in Europe. That's a good thing. Revenge for the Greek workers and what the EU did to Greece and what it did to Portugal and Spain and Ireland, even situations people don't understand and don't read about here. The austerity measures that have been forced on people, especially in Greece, where they elected a government to fight that. They had a referendum. They said, no, we don't agree with your austerity measures. And the majority of the population voted against it. Still, it was forced down their throats by the European Central Bank, by the EU, by the forces of capitalism. The EU is a capitalist. It's like a trade agreement on steroids. It's not democratic. You have an unelected group that controls it at the top that decides what the policies will be, despite there being European parliamentary elections. The elections are null and void in terms of policy from the top. It's got tons of anti-labor stuff in it. It's a horrible, horrible thing, and people rightly saw it as a horrible thing. Now, was there any kind of racist, anti-immigrant stuff going on? Of course there was, partially because the Labor Party and a lot of liberals, instead of fighting for the leave vote and fighting against the EU, they decided to embrace it. They decided, the EU is suddenly our friend. You know, it'd be like calling the IMF your friend if you're from the left. I mean, it was really ridiculous. So as you probably know, the Leave vote won in a national referendum. It forced the resignation of the conservative Prime Minister Cameron. He stays on till October. He's gone now. That's a good thing, objectively. And people that I've argued with on Facebook and in person and so on have said, well, what do you mean? They'll replace Cameron with someone else. Of course they will. Of course they will. But since when was the Leave vote going to solve everything? No, it was a tactical vote to get a body shot into the bourgeois, body shot into capitalism, to hurt them a little bit, to show discontent, you know? And if some people from the right, there was a couple right populists, Nigel Farage, Boris Johnson, two people that advocated a Leave vote that come from conservative right-wing populism, in Farage's case from a new party called UKIP that is anti-immigrant, that is really horrible. But there are plenty of average working people, and the demographics, since the stats are coming in now, the poorer the area, the more there was a vote for leave, with some exceptions in Scotland where they tied leave in it's complicated what happened in Scotland. They basically thought, if we get independence from Britain, we're going to need the EU somehow. It's a mistake, but that's how they thought. But it will trigger, and this was not a mistake, hopefully, this hopefully will happen, another Scottish independence vote, because it's now weakened the whole European Union, which in itself is a good thing, because it's a bourgeois institution. It's not something the workers created or the labor movement created. So the liberal media, and I mean that literally, liberals in the media, but also conservatives, the whole corporate media together, has then gone nuts on the people. And you can find all tons of talk shows and opinion pieces and straight-up supposed news items basically saying, oh, the Leave vote is just all a bunch of racists, and the whole thing is horrible, and there's going to be terrible suffering and so on. Now, what's happened since then, and this is all within, a week or so, the bourgeois, and this isn't good, but this is what they did, they said they'll pour money in to stop any sort of effects. So the stock market has actually recovered already. I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm just saying it's what's happened. I'm not sure about Britain itself, but in other places. They're talking about just ignoring the vote. Can we just overturn this vote the way they've overturned votes in the past and stuff like this? And it's much more complicated and interesting in a lot of ways than what the corporate media is saying, obviously, which they're just trying to say basically the people were stupid. And this was like the biggest vote for a referendum ever. So it was a huge amount of people that voted for leaving the EU. Were they all racist, all right wingers? Of course not. They ignored the fact that left groups like the Socialist Party, which is part of the Committee for Workers International, and other left groups also supported a leave vote, again, as a shot against this tool of the EU and how it's used against unions, against working people. So basically, I was looking around the media thinking, who's going to stand up to this onslaught of, hey, if you support the Leave vote, you're a racist or something. Who's going to really stand up to that? I was pleasantly surprised to see Tariq Ali, for example, came out. Tariq Ali is funny. He goes, quote, pleased Brexit has given the EU a big kick up the backside. John Pilger Why the British Said No to Europe. Go to johnpilger.com. Check that out. And then, you know, here and there, others. Of course, you know, you can read good stuff, at, like I said, at socialistworld.net. We even have a video out from Hannah Sell, the Socialist Party Deputy General Secretary. You can find it at socialistworld.net. And others, you know. Unfortunately, Corbyn caved, and he's paying for it now. Corbyn and the so-called left of the British Labour Party, they went along with the Remain vote. They wanted to stay in the EU. It totally goes against the basic socialist ideas. But they did it. And they thought they'd be rewarded for it. They thought to get some peace from the right wing. Instead, the right wing used it against them. In Britain right now, there's a big thing going on in the Labour Party where the right wing has managed to get enough votes to bring Corbyn down as the party leader. My understanding is there has to be like other things happen first, like other votes before that can happen. And they did that on the excuse that he didn't campaign for Remain enough. So anyway, check out the few and the far between, but they're out there that understood that the Brexit vote, the Leave vote, was a vote of working class people fed up to frickin' here, so angry, and I understand this 110%, that's what we started off the show trying to explain a little bit about working class anger, that they said, we just want to stick it to them, this is going to hurt the rich. I see these sob stories about bankers lost some money right after this passed, they probably got it all back, but I'm like, good, excellent, brilliant. You know, and you saw some people brainwashed by the corporate media saying, well, I don't know. It's going to cause uncertainty. We need uncertainty. The daily lives of working people is uncertain. The future of working people is precarious and uncertain. Remember that we were talking about the precariat at previous shows, not the proletariat, the precariat. You don't know where your next job is going to come from. It's going to be a temp job, whatever. Hey, that was a vote of working class anger, and we embrace it here on Socialist Alternative Radio, and we want to extend it.
They took the example of Iceland, so... If Iceland did it, they didn't weren't worse off afterwards. If anything, they were better off. Nationalized their banks.
That's a great example, Diego. Look at Iceland. Look at the votes in Greece before Tsipras caved and for Syriza. There's a lot of precedent for this. There were votes in Portugal, I believe, that had to do with the EU getting out of the UE. They forced three votes through, and by the third time, people gave up, and it passed to stay in. So the situation is a lot different. Again, look on counterpunch.org, look at socialalternative.org for more on that. So we ran out of time. Maybe we'll get a little more into that next time. Diego, thanks for coming. Any last words?
Power to the people. And that's all I got to say. Keep your head up and don't believe the hype.
Thanks, Diego. I'm glad you could make it in despite this new job. You're going to have Sunday work at this at the new job too?
I might have to.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So a lot of workers working on Sundays now and Saturdays. You don't get your weekends and all that. Well, but anyway, we're going to,
reason I'm saying that is because it's a small business thing, you know, and I have to go there on a Sunday because it's the chicken day, fried chicken day.
I got to come in for fried chicken day sometime.
I'm the prep guy.
So, all right. So thanks, Diego, for making it in. We'll be here two weeks from today. We were here every other week. You've been listening to Socialist Alternative Radio, talking music from a working class democratic socialist perspective. Thanks for listening. Don't believe the hype. Don't believe the corporate media about anything, whether it's lesser evilism or whether it's Brexit vote or whatever. Talk to the people. Learn from the people. Learn from Socialist Alternative. Not that we have all the answers, but we're not going to be giving you the standpoint of how to make more money for the bankers. And that's what you see in the corporate media. But also get out there and fight for things. Fight for that $15 minimum wage we all need here in Massachusetts and beyond in the U.S. It should be a federal law. And take care, and thanks for listening.